Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Meeting Pros.
Welcome to this week's episode of Meeting Pros. I'm Michael Lauer, and we have with us today the Director of Sustainability at Meet Green, Ms. Shauna McKinley. How are you doing, Shauna?
I'm good. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing very well. Great to have you on the show today. Calling
Thank
from Portland, Oregon, right?
I'm actually calling from Vancouver, Canada.
Oh.
Meet Green is based in Portland, Oregon, but I'm a little north of the border.
So you are an international caller today.
I am.
Awesome. That's great stuff. So tell me a little bit about Meet Green and what you guys are doing for folks.
So Meet Green is an event management company, and we specialize in sustainable events. We actually just arrived at our 20th anniversary, so we've been around for a while. And green meetings, green conferences have been a key part of what we've done from the outset. And because we started that very early on, we've also developed an area of our business that specializes in it exclusively. So we often get asked by different organizations, planners and suppliers included, to help them green their event.
So as Director of Sustainability, what's your role in this entire process?
So my role is to oversee all sustainability-oriented practices at Meet Green. So that means where we have a conference team that's going out in the field, making sure that they've done their research and they're prepared to execute against sustainability goals on site. So that may mean that they're trying to reduce waste or they're doing a community service project so that they're prepared to do that in the field. It also means that where we have a special project where we may not be directly involved in planning the event ourselves, that we are training, mentoring, researching, and assisting the planner who does do that with their own sustainability goals. And typically those tend to be a bit more advanced than a conference that might just be doing a run-of-the-mill or a standard green program. We work with a lot of groups who often have very specialized waste management needs, very involved on-site programs. Perhaps they have low-carbon meeting strategies and carbon offset programs that they're doing. So my job is to try and make that all make sense for people and be successful out there at their events.
Sure. So what exactly, for the folks at home, is event sustainability?
So sustainability is really the idea of caring for the future health and prosperity of a variety of things. And obviously, in this case, we're talking about the event industry. So a lot of people have come to know it as being mindful of the triple bottom line of our events. So we're very good at being mindful of the economic bottom line. Everybody wants a fiscally feasible event. But looking at the two other pillars, the environmental and social pillars, of our business practices are relatively new. And sustainability is really about ensuring we have prosperity for all three pillars. So we're not only being economically responsible, but environmentally and socially responsible as well.
Right. So what's a typical client look like for you guys?
We're working with actually a variety of associations and corporate events right now. My project load right now is probably half and half. We work with religious associations who have really interesting social justice sustainability programs for their event. We also have a lot of technology corporations that work with us as well who are interested in really leading in terms of social aspects as well, but even more so with environmental things. So how can they be innovative in reducing their waste footprint, their carbon footprint?
So for meeting planners listening, or if I'm a meeting planner, why should I really care about, event sustainability and being a little more green?
So, there's a lot of push-pull factors, and they tend to vary by organization or by individual. I think that on the positive side, us within the event industry, we have amazing power to do good and to leave a legacy with the events we plan. And we can do that by exercising our muscle in our supply chain, so asking of our suppliers better, smarter, sustainable practices. I mean, that really drives more value for you, where you're able to negotiate not just a typical event service, but hey, can we do this typical event service in a smart, sustainable way? I think we are having a real blossoming in terms of community service projects and volunteer projects in the sustainability arena, and that means that we have these really exciting experiences we can deliver, and we create a lot of social good for the organizations we work for. So there's a lot of positive motivators, but there's also sort of risk management motivators and resiliency motivators. So when you think about it, the logistics that we take care of for events, they're a reflection on our attendees. They're a reflection on the sponsors we represent and the organizations we work for. And oftentimes, things that people see or notice on site can be a reflection of those groups in a positive way or in a negative way. I'll give you an example. I was following an event virtually a couple months back and keeping track of the Twitter stream for the event. And a woman that I know, the event was about sustainability in universities in Canada, and she tweeted out a picture of a session she was attending where the panelists' front table, the head table, had been set with bottled water. And she made the comment of, bottled water appropriate at a green event? And unfortunately, behind the picture in the background, there was, you know, the very visible logo of the sponsor for that session. So being proactive about sustainability out front in terms of your basic logistics can really help to avoid those kind of embarrassing situations that can impact our reputation. And there's also cost factors, too. So you can probably look no farther than the California drought right now to see that the cost of our food, you know, we're being told in the media now that, you know, expect produce prices to go up. They're on a water shortage in California. And so being able to look at your event plan and say, gosh, what menu choices am I making are more water-wise, because beef, for example, has a higher water footprint than chicken does, can be a positive reflection on your brand, on your organization, to show that you're sensitive to those issues and potentially avoiding costs as well.
So from what I'm gathering is that there's lots of different ways to be sustainable and to be green, and they don't all cost more to be green. I know that's a common misconception. Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to lie to your listeners. There are some things that will definitely cost more. And frankly, there are things that we probably should be paying for, particularly when you look at promotional items or something like your conference T-shirt. Maybe you have a volunteer corps or staff and you're producing T-shirts for them. You know, we have choices out there in the marketplace to pay $2, $3 for a T-shirt. And we have choices to pay a little bit more to know that it was built in a factory that has fair, ethical, safe practices for their workers. So things like that, I think people should be prepared and conscientious that, you know, there's times when where we don't pay fair market value for something, there are often external costs to that. So the question then becomes, okay, how can I invest in those things that are important? And one way to do that is by looking at where you can have efficiencies in other areas. So, for example, maybe you've chosen a destination that is, your hotels and your convention package are close enough together where you can do away with your ground shuttles. So you can free up, you know, maybe tens of thousands of dollars by reducing or eliminating those to invest in these other areas. Reducing things like food waste often present you with a lot of cost savings because you're more carefully planning your food and you're having to pay the caterer less money to take that waste away after your event if you're finding you're dealing with excessive amounts. So there's sort of these areas cost more, there's areas that don't cost more, and what we encourage people to do is to look for a neutral bottom line. And to also use their buying power. What a lot of people don't realize is we kind of take this approach to sustainable events where we, you know, we get the standard stuff in place, where we've got our venue and our destination and our contracts are in place. Oh, and then we'll think of the green stuff.
Right. You got to kind of begin with the end in mind a little bit, huh?
Yeah. So if you put it at the front of the line, you have more bargaining power. And that can allow you to negotiate added waste services, compostable serviceware, maybe some more sustainable food choices, but you have to start early.
So I've done all these things and I've made my event more sustainable and more, you know, eco-friendly. How do I measure the value and the ROI? Because, you know, like with anything else, if I'm doing this, there has to be a net gain for the event, right?
Absolutely. So what we encourage people to do is, before you get too bogged down in your green event checklist, is to take a step back and really focus in on the objective you're trying to achieve. So let's say, for example, you've set an objective that you want to measure a service legacy from your event, and you are doing a volunteer corporate responsibility project on site with your attendees. Having that objective, you then want to design a strategy that makes sense to measure that value. So you can do that a variety of ways. You can collect testimonials from your attendees. You can collect testimonials from your beneficiary organization about the difference that that activity has made to them. You may even want to include an evaluation rating on your attendee evaluation form at the end of event that sort of says, you know, how do you feel, how successful, how much did you enjoy this activity? And you can also measure your impact in really tangible ways. You know, the number of volunteer hours that your attendees gave. And, you know, a volunteer hour, I think, in the U.S. today is estimated to be worth something like $20 an hour. So you can also attach financial value, you know, an in-kind financial value to that. Or maybe you've raised money. So, you know, maybe you had a growing number of attendees that were attending. So it's really important to settle on the objective first and then tease out an appropriate way to measure it. And you can do that with various objectives. So if your objective is reducing waste, well, then you want to look at a way with your convention venue that they can measure that waste stream for you. Is there a way they can weigh it? Can they estimate volume? You know, if you're doing a small banquet, let's say, can they count the number of bags of trash that they take out or the number of bags of recycling so that you can start to get a sense of the volume of waste that you're producing?
So is technology helping or hurting this process, this trend to going more green?
Oh, it's totally helping. You know, I think we have a lot of really exciting low carbon meetings strategies we can have where we adopt technology. And I know that's a little bit controversial, but at the end of the day, someone going to a conference trade show burns the emissions equivalent of 2 barrels of oil. And when they
wow.
can attend virtually, it's like, you know, less than 5% of a barrel of oil. So at the end of the day, hybrid events and virtual events and the technology they use are a really important tool in the toolbox. And I'm not saying, you know, cancel your event, but maybe be really smart about, you know, is there an audience of people that are really just looking for information who are best to invite to attend virtually? Or are there those people who really need to be there in person because they're looking for sales targets and, you know, business development relationships and things like that? So I think technology allows us to be smarter with designing the meeting's media to really meet what the actual objective of the attendee is so that, you know, they can choose the best medium for them.
Well, that's an important thing you just mentioned, too, is that everything that you can do to be green may not work for every event, right?
Exactly. Every event is different. You know, what you'll do to green a, you know, a major music festival is very different than a corporate trade show. You know, your impacts are different, your stakeholders are different, and your degree of control is different. And that's really important because the event planner, there's things that you can control, but there's also some things that you're really only going to be able to influence. And oftentimes you have to prioritize the two because you can't do everything at once.
So what is the current trend? What's the industry moving towards as far as sustainability? I mean, we're past the eliminating bottle water and, you know, reducing paper. What's the next big trend?
I think people are really, you know, we've had a lot of what I'll call sort of flailing around doing a lot of different things for a while and sort of going out in all directions. I think people are becoming more strategic. That's the main trend that we've seen. So they're targeting and focusing their efforts on where their biggest impacts are, where their brand values are. So this isn't just about, you know, sort of what I want to do in a loosey-goosey way. It's really about being strategic, about what brings the most value and what manages your biggest impacts. And they're integrating their efforts more. So this isn't just about what me as the event host wants to do. It's about how can I create a way to do something that aligns with my supplier's goals, that also brings my sponsors on board so they look good and they can collaborate in the initiative, and also that my attendees will get excited about. So it requires, you know, more proactive and strategic forethought than it did before. And it's kind of less about the tactics. It's more about really strategic objectives. I think when you look at the tactics, there's also new things that people are becoming interested in. We're seeing much more focus on social responsibility issues like fairness. You know, we talked about with the T-shirt sourcing before and
right.
how labor is being treated and health and safety and things like that. And food waste is a big issue as well because, you know, we waste 165 $1 billion in food every year in the U.S., and it's a staggering problem we really need to get a handle on, and it just breaks people's heart to see that food go out at the end of an event that
right.
isn't served and can't be donated. So a lot of people get really proactive on that one.
So what's in the future now for Meat Green?
We have clients that are really committed to continuous improvement, and what's really exciting for us is we get to play in these different sandboxes where we're challenged every day to do something new and different. I was just working with a client who's decided that it's not enough for them to buy local, seasonal, sustainable for their food. They want to really drive down the carbon footprint embodied in their food, which means they want to choose protein sources that are more water-wise and more carbon responsible. So those kinds of things are really exciting for us because it forces us to do a lot of research to get good information to help them make the best decisions. And again, they're thinking really strategically. So to some extent, we try to guide our clients where they're feeling a need to move in new directions. But what's really exciting is we work with a lot of passionate people in those organizations that have found an issue they care about, and they're often driving us to go in the direction that they want to go on issues like their food sourcing, for example. So it's really exciting, you know.
Sounds exciting. Sounds like you guys are doing some great work.
Never a dull day.
Well, where can folks go to learn more, maybe reach out to you, potential clients and things of that nature?
Well, we're available at meatgreen.com online. And we also have a really active social media presence, so they can follow us at Meat Green or myself. I am at S_McKinley on Twitter. And be really great to have conversations with folks about the challenges they're experiencing. And there's a lot of great free tools out there for people if they're looking for self-help. But if they're also looking for more hands-on help, we can help them with those kind of requests too.
Great. Well, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Michael.
Next up on Meeting Pros, we have with us Jamila Center, Director of Marketing and Communications for the Association Forum of Chicagoland. How are you doing, Jamila?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a while since we've chatted. We met in Chicago about a month ago, I'm looking forward to catching up and seeing what's new with you guys.
Perfect. We have lots going on.
Lots going on. I know you had an event where I want to recap that and figure out all the good stuff that happened there. But first, just recap and tell us about the Association Forum of Chicagoland.
Okay. The Association Forum of Chicagoland is essentially the Association of Associations. So we have about 4,000 members, and our members represent several associations in the Chicagoland area. We provide a lot of education and networking opportunities for our members. And in addition to our members who are association professionals or those who work at other associations, we also have nearly 700 members who fall under the supplier partner category. So that means that these are people who work at businesses, and these businesses provide resources, products, solutions, services, destinations for the association industry.
So associations join you to figure out best practices to be an association kind of thing?
Exactly. So basically all of our programs are the purpose is to help people run their associations better and just in general to elevate the professional practice of association management.
So I know people know of associations, but you are an association for associations. Tell me a little bit about the association community in general, not just in Chicago, but nationally as well. Is this pretty common to share best practices like this?
It is. There are, throughout the country, there are a lot of individual, state association societies. So, for example, there is the Wisconsin Society of Association Executives. So people who work in Wisconsin often will be members of that. And then there is another organization called ASAE, and they are located in the D.C. area. And they are probably the largest association of associations, being that they are in D.C., and D.C. has the largest concentration of associations in the country. So, you know, the services that we provide are similar, but, you know, we definitely keep our focus right now on the Chicagoland area, which is the second largest hub for associations in the country.
Wow. And there's pretty much an association for everything, right?
Yes, there is. You know, one of our biggest associations is the Lions Club International. And, you know, that's an organization that has over a million members in their organization. And then we have, you know, a very some very small associations, such as the Promotional Products Association of Chicago, where, you know, I'm not exactly sure how many members they have, but they have only one employee. So, you know, it definitely runs the gamut. There's an association for pet supplies. There's an association for interior lighting and design, as well as a separate association for exterior lighting and design. you know, there literally is an association for just about everything. There's a popcorn manufacturer and distributors association.
So you take all types, and there are some best practices that can be shared from even associations that don't necessarily have anything to do with each other, because it's all about serving constituents, right?
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of things, you know, we focus, I guess, on the major functional areas of any association, which include things related to governance and board structure, chapter management. So, you know, associations that are national or international in scope will, you know, have their national group, but then they may have individual chapters spread out throughout the country and even, you know, in many cases throughout the world. So what are best practices in managing all of those chapters? We also have programs specifically for the finance people, for the marketing people, for the publishing people, for the people who develop the education and, you know, other continued education opportunities that the associations provide. Let's see, what else? We have groups for or services that we provide for the membership people. So how can they better, you know, keep the members that they have and attract new members and keep them engaged? You know, it fully covers every area of association
right.
management. So it's definitely you get, you know, all types of different people with very different roles, but all working for organizations that are primarily mission-based, which is, you know, interesting in that they are trying to serve their general audiences in the best way possible. So, you know, we just try to do whatever we can to help them with that. And besides the programs that we provide specifically, you know, another key benefit of why people join Association Forum is just for the community and having the opportunity to meet and get advice from people at other associations who operate, you know, in a similar functional area. So, for example, although someone may work at the Interior Lighting and Design Association in the marketing capacity, certainly they can gain insights from another marketing professional at a healthcare organization.
So
you
yeah.
know, providing people with access to similar peers and networking is something that our members really find, you know, amongst the most valuable things that they get out of their involvement with Association Forum. You know, if they're looking for solutions to a problem, if they're looking for a new idea on how to approach something, they really utilize each other, which is great.
So you guys have to stay up on the current trends and keep upping the ante, because that's how your associations learn, is from what you put on, right?
Yeah, that's very true. And in fact, you know, we kind of internally consider ourselves to be sort of the learning laboratory.
And the guinea pig, right?
Yeah, we kind of are. And so one of the things actually that we're really trying to focus on, you know, very recently is publishing and broadcasting and putting out there our journeys of what we're trying that's different, why we're trying these different things, and then what was the result? Did it work? Did it not work? But we're putting it out there for our members to absorb and consume, right, and react to. And, you know, along the way, we're getting some ideas and some suggestions, which is, you know, it's fantastic.
So, and a lot of times this learning is done at some events that you hold. What are some events you have year-round? I know you just had your big one, your annual one, a month or so ago, and I want to talk about that, but what are some you have coming up first?
Okay, so upcoming events, we are kind of changing some things based on some research that we've done over the last 18 months. So we are focusing more on offering people the opportunity to take a deeper dive into content areas. Historically, our education programs outside of our big events would be, you know, maybe two-hour programs or maybe half-day programs, which were fine and great, but people really kind of wanted to dig deeper. So what we are doing is developing, you know, several day-long programs. So the one that we will actually be doing very soon, coming up, I think, on September 26th, is Medical Meetings Evolve or Expire.
Huh.
And that program is geared at healthcare professionals, which, by the way, Chicago is the largest hub for healthcare-related associations.
Really?
It is. So we have a special program for those association professionals who work at healthcare-related associations, and this particular program is going to focus really on educational design from a few different angles. One angle is just how do you make that program offering so valuable and so unique that people would be willing to pay their own way to attend. So, you know, that program will get into some strategies on really tapping into your brand's unique value proposition and then delivering that through all of your programs. And how do you do that? And, you know, what are the strategies behind that? And then the other thing related to that is, so as you seek to change your program and make it very exciting and entertaining and engaging, many education programs that associations provide, you know, are worth continuing education credits. So how do you then work with the accrediting bodies to ensure that your program is continuing,
right,
to meet those very specific requirements? And then the third aspect is on sponsorship. A lot of associations rely heavily on sponsorship dollars in order to be able to, you know, bring in fantastic speakers,
right,
and presenters and things like that. So how do associations, particularly in healthcare, where there are extra regulations on sponsorship and things of that nature, how do you navigate that field attracting sponsors with unique and interesting packages where there is real value for them investing while still following the rules of the regulatory bodies?
What are some current ways that you guys do that?
Well, you know, that is a good question. I don't quite have the answers, but I'm sure that upon attending this program, I will.
I see what you're saying. So you got to be pay to play kind of thing.
Kind of, yeah.
But the point is that what are some challenges that associations currently face then getting sponsors? What are some hoops they have to jump through, some current legislation?
Well, you know, there's a lot of competition for the same dollars.
Right.
So it's really, you know, there's a lot of competition for the same dollars is one thing. Another thing that's really, you know, kind of a challenge is how do you calculate the return on this investment?
Right.
Is it, okay, so I'm going to do, you know, kind of a very traditional sponsorship where I'm going to pay, you know, X amount of dollars and you're going to place my logo on all these things and maybe I'll get, you know, an opportunity to stand up and talk to your group for 2, 3, 5 minutes. And, you know, then you're going to give me a mailing list at the end. You know, how do you
quantify a win on that? Right.
Yes. So that's a challenge. And then, you know, I would say that that's kind of the biggest challenge. And, you know, so how do you then craft something different? How do you craft something for a sponsor that is truly unique and valuable for them? So that requires taking a different approach and really working with the sponsors individually to understand their specific needs and then designing a program for them around
right.
their needs. So, you know, for some, because maybe their product or their business is a very high ticket, you know, enterprise software solutions that costs, you know, $100,000
right.
at the low end. So they probably are only interested in a very specific audience, you know, like CEOs,
CIOs,
and
CTOs,
IT
yeah.
directors,
right.
or something like that. So you kind of have to take a step back from these broad, all-encompassing programs and really hone in and, you know, highlight the value. So you have to do a lot more internal research and investigating. Okay, well, if you want to target this particular group, you know, you're talking about a group with budgets for your item that range from, you know, $2 million to $3 million or whatever it may be.
Whatever, right.
Yeah. So it's not just, you know, here's our list of options and you can email it off to people. So, you know, for an association with their internal resources, it can be a bit challenging to get to that level of customization.
Right, right.
For every opportunity. So that's kind of a big challenge. And then, you know, I guess the other aspect is with the further, you know, continuing surge of digital marketing and, you know, mobile marketing and things like that, you know, those, it's a lot easier to come up with a very specific, perfect metric on you place this banner ad, you got this many clicks, you know, you can see who clicked them, that converted to this many leads or this much traffic to your site. You know, it's very quantifiable.
Right.
So, and that's fine and that's great for those types of opportunities. But when you're talking about other opportunities that aren't quite as quantifiable, it becomes just more difficult to justify. But as more things become, you know, hard numbers, the expectation then from the sponsor side is that everything will be based on those hard numbers, and it's just not quite possible at this point.
Right. I mean, it's all about knowing what works and making it better. If you can't, then you're just spinning your wheels and you're wasting money, right?
Yes.
So from an association standpoint, is you want to keep upping the value for sponsors to make sure that they get it what they want to out of your event, but without coming out of inconvenience cost to the attendee, right? It's a huge balance, right?
It is a huge balance. You know, we have to work on two sides, to attract the right attendees or to develop programs that are going to attract a particular kind of attendee and then find the appropriate sponsor who wants that attendee.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting. Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. Playing matchmaker, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So tell me more about the event you guys just recently had.
Okay. So the event that we just had was called Forum Forward, and it was our, revised approach, our reimagined annual meeting. So like most associations, we have a meeting every year. We offer education and, you know, networking opportunities and things like that. In the past, we had what was called Association Week, and that consisted of our annual meeting, which was one day, which drew in, I don't know, around 400 people, maybe a little less. And then we had a few other events throughout the week, but they were much smaller. So we had like a Young Professionals Meet Experienced Professionals event on Monday, and then we had our annual meeting on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday we did a community service activity, and then on Thursday we had our awards program, which is a big gala event here at Navy Pier. And then, you know, Friday was kind of all-star day, meant to recognize your top employees.
Right.
Which conceptually sounds great. However, we found through research that our members were confused between Association Week and the annual meeting specifically.
Right.
And so also we looked internally at the resources required to build and support and market all of these different individual events, as opposed to taking a collective look and thinking about how can we kind of bring some of this together and create one spectacular event. So that's what we attempted to do with Forum Forward. So instead of having a single day annual meeting, we essentially just took 2.5 days and combined a lot of things there. So we, first of all, had a specialized full day track for our CEOs, which is the CE-only summit, and that attracted about 70 CEOs from associations in the Chicagoland area, and actually some from D.C. as well.
Wow.
And they, you know, they had their own learning track. They were together with each other for the full day. And then for everyone else, we kind of had 4 major areas of focus in terms of the educational program. And that was expanding relevancy and revenue, marketing, big data and information technology, and the association model of the future. And again, based on the research that we have been conducting for the past 18 months, we identified that those were the key topics that our membership was most interested in learning more about. They're the most critical issues today, and they presented the biggest challenges to overcome, and at the same time, the biggest opportunities to spur growth. So we focused all of the education sessions around those 4 pillars. We also incorporated for the first time an innovation hub. So in the innovation hub, there were many things going on. We had exhibitor kiosks, about 20 of them, with very carefully selected exhibitors that were providing mostly tech-type solutions that related to those 4 pillars. So, you know, some association management software, some event and mobile app software, a lot of tech-type companies. were represented there because it was a direct tie-in to the education that people were experiencing at the same time. So people could go to a session on event app games, and then they could come upstairs to the Innovation Hub and talk to an exhibitor that was offering that solution and help them put into context the information that they had just gained in the session. So that was a really neat component. Also in the Innovation Hub, we took a different approach to some of our learning environments. So typically, you know, at these types of things, you go to your education session, it's in a ballroom type of setting, you know, with some round tables, and there's a person up at front with, you know, a table, a PowerPoint, a screen, and, you know, that's fine and good. But we understand that people like to learn in different ways. And so we came up with the concept of think tank theaters. So within the Innovation Hub, we had two theater-style setups with, you know, kind of like pod-looking comfy chairs and really no walls. And those facilitated more of a roundtable or discussion-based format, or a facilitated discussion, if you will. And, you know, if you've ever been to a conference or a convention and you walk into a session and, you know, a couple of minutes in, you're like, oh, no, this really isn't going to be for me. But then how do I leave? I'm up here in the front. You know, you're just kind of trapped. So with these think tank theaters, you know, people could come and go. You could walk up and stand around for 15, 20 minutes, capture, you know, the highlights part of the conversation, and feel comfortable then moving on if that's what you decided to do.
Right.
So it was just a really interesting learning format. And based on the survey feedback results, you know, people loved it. And then another thing that went on in the Innovation Hub, so we had all the meals and all of the breaks in the hub, and we staggered the education program schedules so that not all sessions would start and end at the same time. So there was a constant flow of people in and out of the Innovation Hub, which was interesting. Another attraction that we had in the hub was live interviews with some of the presenters. So we partnered with a company called CNTV, which stands for Convention News Television. And, you know, we've worked with them in the past for one of our upcoming events, Holiday Showcase, where they kind of go around and they get, like, it's like kind of like live news coverage, if you will.
Right.
But what we had them do here is take about 10 to 15 minutes and interview one-on-one some of the presenters from the education sessions, which was really exciting. And, you know, people could come and kind of stand around and sit around and watch and, you know, listen to these interviews and kind of get the backstory, if you will, on some of the presenters and why their topics, you know, were important, and kind of either a recap or a preview of their session. So that was also really well received, and from my standpoint in marketing, very great resources to have, because now I have 17 interviews
that you can,
all really
right.
on a different topic that I can
leverage at any point.
Yes, leverage them at any point. And then I guess the other thing is, you know, everybody ate all of their meals in the hub, and it was just kind of a...
Well, you just had a whole different kind of comprehensive event. I mean, you just changed, you changed everything about it. You made it more...
We changed everything about it.
You made it a totally different event, and you upped the value for everybody to attend a few days instead of having to pick and choose a different across a week, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Now, we still did keep it flexible. If people only wanted to come... One day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
One day.
Right.
And then another thing that we did, actually, so one of our top, actually, I think our highest rated member benefit are our shared interest groups, or SIGs, as we call them. And so we have, I believe, 20 different SIGs, and they're all based on the various functional areas of association management. So, you know, kind of the list that I gave before, the marketing SIG, the governance SIG, the finance SIG, the COO's and number two SIG, the small association CEO SIG, you know, and the list goes on, the marketing SIG, the young professional SIG, the book publishing SIG. So we had on Thursday a SIG symposium where just about all of our SIGs, I think maybe two didn't have meetings for various reasons, but just about all of our SIGs all had meetings on the same day. We structured it. We looked at which SIGs our various members were part of, and then tried to structure it so that people could attend two different SIG meetings on Thursday of their choice, which people just loved because that's, you know, one half day out of the office.
Right.
They're getting two different meetings in instead of essentially having to come downtown or, you know, leave their office twice. It was kind of just wrapped in a nice little package and easy for people to take advantage of that. So that was, you know, something
completely
different that we also just tried. So we basically just took the whole thing and put it in a bag and shook it up.
Made it real easy for people to get a hold of, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, definitely in the process, we learned some things that we could do different. Some, you know, opportunities to further build engagement and collaboration amongst the people who were there. You know, we got a lot of great feedback in our post-event survey. And so, you know, it was year one, and, you know, we're definitely looking forward to making some of these changes for year two, but we're really excited about it.
Well, if people want to go and sign up for an event or learn more about Association Forum of Chicagoland, where can they go to do that?
They can just always go to associationforum.org.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Jamila.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
And last up today on Meeting Pros, we have with us Nancy Zavada with Meet Green and Green Meeting Industry Council. How are you doing, Nancy?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Did I get that last name right?
You did. I was going to compliment you on that. That very rarely happens for me.
I just rolled the dice and went with it. So tell me a little bit. I know we've spoken with a coworker earlier today. We spoke with Ashana McKinley. About Meet Green, and I wanted to focus more on Green Meeting Industry Council with you, but if you could just give me a little bit of mission and purpose of GMIC.
Great. The Green Meeting Industry Council's mission and purpose really is to connect meeting planners and suppliers who are interested in having sustainable initiatives at their conferences, connecting them, giving them education, providing resources, really being the one-stop shop for sustainable meetings.
So how does this differ or collaborate with Meet Green?
Meet Green is our company, which provides sustainable consulting as well as conference management services. The Green Meeting Industry Council is a nonprofit industry association.
Okay, so what are some other members like Meet Green that may join up with GMIC?
Oh, there are, I believe, over 700 members right now.
Wow.
There's groups like McDonald's, Oracle, Gap, United Universalist Organizations. There's
a lot of big names.
A lot of big names. What you'll really find in this organization is the more advanced planners who are managing a lot of times very big conferences who are interested in sustainability. It's very few kind of the rookie planners.
Right. So for GMIC, are you kind of sharing best practices for going green, or is there more kind of more to it than that? Like, I'm sure there's some mentoring. Yeah, I'm sure there's some mentoring and some networking, a lot of stuff going on with that.
Right. So can I give you a little background on?
Yeah, great. Go ahead.
So it's been 10 years now. 10 years ago, we really thought that there should be a place to go for just getting green as it was called then, not so much sustainability, but really green meeting practices for people to be able to collaborate, network, get some resources. My business partner at that time and I, Amy Spatrazzano, decided that we'd take it to the big names in the meeting planning organizations and say, you know, why don't you do this as an addition, maybe, you know, fund it and you know, really get involved in sustainability. And there was not a lot of interest 10 years ago in that. They kind of poo-pooed the ideas, and we were really kind of depressed and went back to our desks here.
Why were they kind of poo-pooing it? What were some of the factors?
I didn't think that sustainability was ever going to catch on, that green meetings were never going to be an important issue, that it was just a trend or a nice-to-have type thing. And we felt very, very strongly and very differently about it. So came back to our office here at Meet Green and just said, you know, we might as well do it. No one else is going to do it. Let's just throw it out there. So we started the organization. It's always been separate from Meet Green. We started it personally with our own personal money and time. And we did. We started with a board of directors of five people, and people started joining us and collaborating and wanted to be on the board. And then we held a conference the very first year, and they still hold conferences to this day. Every spring. So we held a conference, and it grew. All of a sudden there were chapters, and there's international chapters. It's become a fabulous organization.
So what has kind of facilitated this mental shift to make people kind of move more towards sustainability as a real option and path?
It's interesting because in the, I don't want to call it 10 years ago the good old days, but in sustainability it kind of is. So 10 years ago, people thought it was the right thing to do. So there's a handful of people and organizations, companies who wanted to do it because it was the right thing to do. And then the economic downturn came, and we thought, oh, that's not going to be good. Sustainability is going to be on the back burner. But actually, it didn't, because sustainable practices, green meeting practices, many times save money. Most of the time, I should say, save money.
So, which is a common misconception, so, right?
A very common myth, and it's just not going away, and it drives me crazy.
I'm sure.
That's a whole nother half hour. So people started, you know, doing these kind of practices to actually save money. And also, a little thing called risk management really came to the forefront, with the meetings industry taking some pretty hard hits for a couple of conferences that went quite mainstream in the media for things that people were doing at conferences, boondoggles, that type of thing. And then corporate citizenship for large companies really became on the forefront. So if you're a large company and you're holding a meeting, and you're inviting your stakeholders, your shareholders, your members, your audience, and you aren't showing that you're a good corporate citizen while at your meeting, and there's the radical transparency of social media and Twitter, and people are really seeing those things right now. It's grassroots. So it became a risk management issue, too.
Because if someone catches you doing something that isn't green, or you say you're being green and you're not, then that's going to be a PR nightmare.
I mean, how long does it take someone to Instagram a styrofoam cup at a conference that's supposed to be about environmental initiatives? Not too long, and it goes viral.
Is that a common thing for people to kind of fake being green?
I don't think it's common, and there are people who do fake it, but I think there's just people who just don't understand that by the choices we make as meeting planners, we can make a huge difference in our footprint of our meeting. I just think it's not an understanding or really believing it takes too much time and effort. Another couple of the myths.
Which goes back to making sure that you quantify a return on investment on being green, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So when someone or a company joins Green Meeting Industry Council, what are some things that they get or have access to after joining?
There are there's webinars that members can watch that other members have produced. There's a whole series of webinars. There's the newsletter. There's attendance in the conference. There's resource kits. There's a whole resource resource kit called Ask For It, where you can go and download the forms and just send your forms out to your AV company or to your caterer, to your hotel. And that will help you give you the, you know, basic things that you want or don't want those people to do for you.
So do you guys have a lot of events year-round or one main one year-round, or what's the kind of rhythm for that?
We have one main one, and then there's also the chapters hold different, you know, depending on the chapter, they might hold a monthly or bi-monthly or quarterly, but there's one main international conference that was just held in San Francisco in April.
Okay, and about how many attendees do you usually get for that?
Oh, right around 300.
That's a pretty nice turnout. Over how many days?
It's over 3 days, 2.5, 3 days. What's nice about the turnout for that is I'm a firm believer in it's not how big a conference is, you need to get to 2,000-3,000. It's about the quality of the people are there and the connection you're able to make with other like-minded people while you're there. What the GMIC conference really draws is the thought leaders in sustainability. So the coursework and the information is fairly advanced, and people are really sharing while they're there. We've had a couple of large companies who are going into, one going into San Francisco, or a couple going into San Francisco, a couple going into Chicago, who have actually teamed up and are, you know, working towards a more sustainable event site, if you will. So they're working together to make their, they call them eco zones, to make their events more sustainable by the buying power of several and sometimes three large events. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned education. What are some specific ways people can learn more about going green through you guys?
Oh, certainly one of the ways is by webinars. There's also and the educational conference and the resource library that they have online, and case studies. There's plenty of case studies as well, and I think case studies are a great way to learn.
So we're starting to see not only green meetings but low carbon meetings, and with all trends, it's really easy to get trapped into, oh yeah, this is what I want to do, and they just do it without having a strategy behind why they're doing it. Is that something you guys help with as well? Or is that more about Meet Green?
That's probably more about Meet Green at this point. People are just, you know, stepping into that foray of low-carbon meetings and what that's going to mean in the future and how it's going to be done. Certainly that is something that GMIC will be working on as well.
How has GMIC impacted your company? Like, how has starting this or being a part of this association made Meet Green more prevalent or helped your business?
That's a really interesting question. In the early stages, when we were going and talking to people about doing sustainability consulting,
yeah,
we would have to first sell sustainability, right?
Right.
And we were one of the very few, if not only for a while, meeting planning companies that would go out and do this kind of consulting. So it was a pretty hard sell to get people first to buy off on the sustainability and then to sign off that they need the consulting to do that.
It's a two-step sale, right?
Two-step sale, absolutely. And then through GMIC and knowing other people, you know, the training, collaboration, we've got competitors now. And we'd never had competitors before.
Right.
But what's nice is we don't have to sell most organizations on sustainability anymore, right?
Right.
So now it's a you know, competition, and it's a pretty friendly competition, really. This group of people, there's a lot of work out there. There's a lot of earth to save. And so I think it's a really friendly group. But it's interesting because it's you know, brought forward our competitors, and now we have those.
Right. Well, the landscape has just changed so dramatically in the past 10 years, but it's changing more rapidly still, right?
Yeah, it is. It is changing rapidly. It's really nice that for a long time the hotel community was a little slow on the uptake. They're really involved. They're really doing some great things. As different chains are on board. You know, the venues are looking to green, and it's, you know, quite a savings for them, energy efficiency savings for them. And so more and more groups are getting involved. It's easier for the planners actually to be green now than it was, because it used to be pretty much a struggle to find, okay, what hotel is green or has any initiatives at all? What venues can I use? What caterers will they even know when I say?
And you're locked into places that have it that you may not be best for your meeting, right?
Right, right. So it's much easier to plan a green meeting now. With that being said, the low hanging fruit of just doing a few things is kind of gone by the wayside. So it gets a little more difficult. You have to dig a little bit deeper.
What are some common misconceptions about going green and being more sustainable that just irk you and you wish you could just like clear the air on right now? I'm sure there are plenty, but I mean, just go for it.
It would definitely be, the first one is the economic benefits of going
right.
green. It's just crazy that there's still a lot of discussion out there about how hard it is. And there's still, some greenwashing or some people who are upcharging for green. It just shocks me when I hear different vendors still doing that.
Right. Describe what greenwashing is for the folks at home.
So for greenwashing is for people who say that they are green, yet they're not necessarily green. They may do one or two little things. Let me give you an example here. So I went to a large convention center in the Southwest, and they said they had recycling. Great. And so we asked for their diversion rate. They gave us a diversion rate, the waste diverted from the landfill.
Right.
Wonderful. Got ready to move in to the venue, sat at the pre-con, and we said, well, we just see waste bins. We don't see any recycling bins here. And they said, oh, the recycling bins will be out. We haven't marked them yet. Well, we said, well, we thought you did, recycling. Oh, yeah, we do recycling. And I said, well, then, you don't have bins already for them. It's just coming out. And they said, well, we don't actually recycle in the venue, but we do in our office.
Oh, man.
Uh-huh. So here I had, and this is my own personal lessons learned, due diligence, and I'm telling a story completely on myself. Because when I was at the site inspection, I didn't pick that up. I didn't go back a house and look to see where the recycling was actually being loaded out onto the trucks. I didn't do my homework. I took that at face value. Yes, in fact, they were recycling. All 20 people in their office had recycling bins next to their desks. But that wasn't going to have any help for the enormous show floor and what was going to come up.
Oh, not even close.
Right.
You needed more than 20.
You need more than 20.
But that's a good point. I mean, maybe sometimes when a venue or a vendor says that they're green, they don't really know what it means to be green. So you got to vet them also, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why third-party certifications are really so important. If you can find a venue that's been LEED certified or Green Globe certified, Green Seal certified, you still have to do a little bit of due diligence, but it's really much easier to be able to really know they know what walking the talk.
Right. So where can folks go learn more about GMIC, maybe get involved or become a member?
It's the website is gmicglobal.org, and you can pop on, and there's all sorts of, different tabs with resources and get to know. If they want to contact me, I'm happy to get them connected with the right folks as well, since I was one of the founders. So it's exciting, but I think it's really important for people who are interested in sustainability, not just as maybe one or two sessions you might go to at some of the other professional organization meetings, but if you really want to be immersed, it's a little like
right.
immersion training, I'm afraid, in that and are a thought leader in that and want to talk to other people who are involved. It's great.
Well, I appreciate you calling in and coming on.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm Michael Lauer here at Meeting Pros, and we'll catch you next time.